Word of mouth.
Word of mouth.
Word of mouth.
Word of mouth.
Mouth.
This is Word of Mouth from NHPR. I'm Virginia Prescott, and today we're exploring the great outdoors. From New Hampshire's abundant transfer stations to what Ansel Adams' striking photographs of the Sierra Nevadas inspired. But first, for most folks, experiencing the great outdoors happens most often in their own backyard. Or as Julie Moyer-Servi would encourage us, the front yard, the side yard, that shady corner, that empty space along the wall, all holding the potential for beautiful landscapes. Julie Moyer-Servi is a landscape designer, author, lecturer, and principal of the Julie Moyer-Servi Design Studio in Saxton's River, Vermont. She's out with a new practical guide called Landscaping Ideas That Work. And we've asked her here for a little advice on creating gorgeous outdoor spaces. Julie, thanks so much for being with us.
Virginia, what a treat.
Thank you. I just recently, like many homeowners, realize that I have a yard. And I'm thinking about what a lot of us are thinking about, what we want in terms of our gardens and what we want them to look like aesthetically.
Yes.
Now, you make a point. It's not aesthetics only. It's about the feeling.
You know, for me, feeling comes before function. Form follows function. Yes, that's always been said in architectural circles. But when you think about it, the even deeper place that is more important to really access and get outright is the feeling. What feeling do you want to have in your backyard?
So you don't have an ideal, you don't have an idea of, you know, what feeling you get.
Well, I think in your yard, I think you have an ideal. And my problem as your designer, were I to be yours, is to figure out what that is. What are the images behind that feeling? Where does it all come from? And then combine your, what I call, inward garden with my inward garden and create something that no one's ever quite seen before.
Well, we're going to ask you a lot of questions, Julie. I know you work all over the country, all over the world even, but your design studio is based in Saxton's River, Vermont, so you understand the climate and the character. So first, do we have to wait till after black fly season?
No, we have to work around all the seasons we have. But certainly it's such a great moment to come outside, look again at your property, and understand what works for you and what doesn't. Whenever we walk on a new site, we do a little site analysis in our brain, if not on by plan, and figure out what are the obvious things that are glaringly bad, but also what are the things that really could change without too much work. Sometimes you have to take a shed out, for instance, and just bulldoze it to be able to get a good view. Sometimes you need to understand that you're facing north and nothing's going to grow next to your house. So you have to make adjustments, of course, for the site.
Some of the things that I hadn't thought about, testing your soil.
Very helpful.
Calculating wind.
Yes.
What do these do for your planning process?
Well, what we think about a lot is the fact that we have nor'easters and nor'westers here in the, Vermont and New England, and they're pretty frigid and difficult. So having evergreen trees that block you on those sides, if you're going to put evergreens in, a little screen of evergreens would help a lot to sort of counteract the forces of those. But then we have southwesterly winds in the summer that are the beneficial winds that keep us, from having to use our air conditioning. So we need to think about those things and how we site our houses.
Is this book for the DIY gardener or the pro or people like me who just have pure lust?
I think it's for everyone because there's a little bit of inspiration for sure in these beautiful photographs. But we also very carefully selected projects that were not over the top. You know, so many people are afraid to even start doing anything, Virginia. It's scary for people to walk outside. For some reason, they feel fine with doing things inside their house, painting the walls, moving the furniture around. But because there are no walls outside and there's sky without a ceiling and, something soft underfoot, people get scared. But the best thing to do is just start. Dig a little piece of your yard up and start planting. And you're going to fail on some of them. Nothing's perfect. But being able to understand that you've made a little corner of beauty is really what it's all about.
I wonder if that also has something to do with, how we look on the outside versus how it feels to be on the inside.
Yeah, you mean
insides are sanctuaries, our outdoors are on display, so there's a different kind of self-judgment even about them.
Well, especially in the front.
Yeah.
And one thing I always say to people is, think about your front yard as though it's a backyard. And suddenly it become all the possibilities are there. You could create a little terrace with some Adirondack chairs and invite your neighbors to come sit with you if you like them. You know, you could sit outside yourself in the front yard. And with space sort of decreasing in terms of, you know, having less space in, for most of us in our own on our own properties, the front yard becomes an important place to develop as well, not just leave it as a big lawn.
We've talked with some people who have edible front lawns.
That's right.
You know, maybe not as necessary here in rural New England, but the edible front lawn. What are some of the things that one would have to consider in doing an edible garden in the front?
Well, the main thing is the sun.
Yeah.
And that's why people often have them in the front yard. We've got some nice examples in the book. And the reason, of course, they're there is it's the best location to be able to get, you know, all day sun, which you really need for most vegetables. And then, of course, you need to ameliorate the soil if you're going to do that. And it's important if you're going to put vegetables in the front yard to think about some overall structure that gives it some beauty, too.
Mm-hmm. So structure meaning the length and or the height and depth of these plants?
The height and depth, maybe the evergreen quality, like mm-hmm. put some boxwood behind where the little corner where the veggies are going so that when you harvest them, there's something that looks solid and good and as supports the whole design.
What are some of your kind of go-to plantings or choices here in New England?
Well, it depends, of course, on what your light level is. Mm-hmm. But let's say we had a shady woodland garden. My favorite plants that I use a lot are Solomon seal, ferns of many sorts, especially ostrich fern. Again, mosses. It's interesting that you love them, too. There's so many other woodland plants, trilliums, some of the wildflowers that we have are really fun to use. We use a lot of natives, as most, you know, often with shrubs, especially burying shrubs to bring birds to our properties, mm-hmm. which is just a treat. There's so many wonderful natives out there. Elderberry, for instance. They're native, but they have fabulous berries.
Other questions that came up about landscaping as we were talking about this internally, moss versus grass. Now, I know my dad, he's dug up his lawn several times to try and plant grass. It's just persistently moss. He's got a lot of evergreens and pines there. Just doesn't seem to want to be grassy.
He's lucky.
Really?
I mean, I love moss gardens.
But I do, too.
I lived in Japan for a while, mm-hmm. and, of course, one thing that you see there are moss gardens in the meditation gardens that they have. The moss that's the easiest for us to transplant and to use, and that's the most kind of pedestrian-friendly, is haircap moss, it's called. And it's beautiful little velvety, almost looks like little trees. And you can walk on it just enough. You can't walk on it constantly, but you can lie on it. It's a beautiful moss, and it can take a lot of sun as well as a lot of shade.
But if you had kids who needed a playground, probably wouldn't want
moss. Still need a little lawn. And there's all, you know, I'm not averse to lawn. I think the thing to think about with it, though, is that think about it as though it's a pool of space so that it becomes the positive in the yard and that the beds around it define that pool of mm-hmm. space, that lawn that's not water, but it almost looks like it's water in your backyard. And it becomes a kind of big terrace that's quite wonderful to walk on and becomes a space within itself.
Well, that's one of the subtle and interesting things about looking at these photographs. There's just defined senses of space. Is that part of how when you look, if you were to look at a vast green lawn, you might think about it in terms of creating little spaces inside of that?
Or a number of linked pieces of lawn, mm-hmm. or a river of lawn, in a sense, that's moving through your backyard that you can use as a path, but also as a place to be or a place to play. So, yes, gardens are malleable objects, but the big thing with it is to find a way to create a structure that looks great in the off times of the year. Some people want symmetry, so, you know, that's an easy way to start because you sort of know where to put every tree. If you put one here, you put the other one opposite it. That's somewhat easier. But a dynamic balance that you create that's done with asymmetry requires a lot of looking and thinking and kind of feeling as you do it.
Is there any difference in that approach? And when you're walking around, you know, thinking of a big project like the Toronto Music Garden that you did with Yo-Yo Ma, I think it was based on one of the box suites.
That's right.
How does that musicality become a landscape?
Well, the way I think about it is, in a way, not every project has to have this, but most projects, to have a kind of uniformity to their design, need a big idea. And the big idea in the Music Garden was, as you say, the first cello suite by Bach. And it has 6 movements to this suite. And so I listened and listened to the music. And the music reminds everyone who listens to it of nature. So it was my job just to figure out what parts of nature. The prelude was all about river and stream. The Allemann was all about squirrel trails that swirled in and out. The Courant is about a big maze and a fabulous hillside of colorful places, colorful plants. And it went from there. So by having that idea of the music helped me design that garden. And of course, talking to Yo-Yo about how he saw it as well, mm-hmm. that created the garden and its kind of harmonies.
Oh, what a wonderful project. Do you have a favorite project or a favorite landscape that you visited?
Well, certainly that's one of my favorites, is the Music Garden, just because it was a big collaborative effort. Everyone who worked on that project, I played the music for, from the laborer to the concrete mixer. So we all were part of an idea, mm-hmm. and everybody's talents helped me build that garden.
Well, one to inspire plenty of inspirational landscapes to look at in Julie's new book. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Virginia.
Landscape designer Julie Moyer-Misservi. She's principal of Julie Moyer-Misservi Design Studio and author of, among other books, Landscaping Ideas That Work. You'll find a link to see photographs of some of the gorgeous landscapes that she's designed, along with more on the Home Outside app and program. That's all at wordofmouthradio.org.